I used to be a teacher. There's all sorts of tricks when the class is noisy. Okay, welcome everybody. Good morning, everybody. Good afternoon, everybody. Hi. I'm Stephen Blake, and I run a company called Respondability. And the reason for that name is, A, that people need to take responsibility for their own actions, but the other thing is we have things that overwhelm us where we go into emotions or feelings that we can't control. Yeah, I'll pull the door to. Right, we have emotions or feelings that we can't control, and they just come onto us, and then the way our body works is we fill our body up with the appropriate chemicals straight away. So I can talk to people and I can see sadness come on, and it comes on like that, and then there's tears and everything else, but the body is full of that chemical, that sadness chemical. I don't name chemicals because they're all sort of mixture of things. And the same happens when we're happy. Something makes us happy, and then suddenly we're full of this wonderful thing. But also our postures change. You know, if somebody's happy, it's shoulders back and everything else, and that's how we sort of portray joy, isn't it? And if we're sad, we're sort of like the shoulders come in a bit, and if we're depressed, it's almost like, don't you dare come near me. And because it works with the two things, and the chemicals come into your body, and then the body reaction is, well, when I feel like this, this is how I react. But we all do slightly different things. Although everywhere in the world, that's happy and that's sad. Same as that's the smile and that's the frown. Okay? It's a natural thing for our body to do that. And when we're under times of stress, we'll actually, part of the body boosts up to run away from the predatory animal that we think's chasing us. And the rest of the body shuts down. Anything you don't need to escape actually shuts down, including your immune system. And so when people talk about, well, I've got a physical illness or I've got an illness that's part of my mind, anybody can come in. It's never one or the other. It's always both. Right? Even if you break your arm, the brain has to sort out what it's going to do with it. And it sorts out giving you pain, sufficient pain that you can't do anything else until you go and get a plaster on it. And have you ever thought about this, that you're in this terrible pain because you've broken your arm, and you go to the hospital and they put a plaster on it, and like 5 minutes after the plaster's on it, it doesn't hurt anymore. Right? It's still broken. But the brain goes, well, what more can I do? We've immobilized it, it's not going to do any harm now. You don't need the pain anymore. Otherwise, it would hurt and hurt and hurt until it mended. Right? So your brain, even with truly physical things, is all part of the mixture. So when we have these feelings or emotions, and I'm going to talk particularly about bad emotions because nobody's come here today to have their joy switched off, have they? and I wouldn't do it if you asked me. So particular feelings that come on, suddenly you're in this sort of, you're on the verge of snapping, you know, you're sort of like, oh, I don't know what to do, and you'll cry or you'll get angry or something happens. And if this is a regular occurrence with you, then all that's running is a bad program. You've just got a program that finds an association with something. Something that's happened in the past to you, and it will actually switch you into that mode. Because it says, when this happens, I have to do this. And it's a protective system. And these protective systems work on the principle that it might give you pain, or it might give you anguish, or it might give you that really sad feeling. But the thought is, from your unconscious part of the brain, that it's not giving you anything as bad as the thing that would happen if you didn't feel like that. Okay? So even when it gives you massive pain because you've broken your arm, it will actually say, right, you've got it mended, now I can turn it off. But if you don't, it won't let you carry on. And we have the same with hunger. That's a survival method. I mean, not many of us now get to the point of starvation. But we get that feeling of hunger, and if we ignore it, it comes back a little bit, it grumbles, and then a bit later on it's like starts getting quite intense. And a few hours later, you can't do anything. You can't even type on a computer because it goes, no, you're eating something. You're going to eat something now, and your brain stops working, and everything stops working until you eat. It has gone off, thank you. I did spot the lens going back in, but I don't know why that would be. Thank you. Right. I also treat people with phobias about cameras. I normally have a spider there on a stand. No, I don't. That's just joking. Right, so today's talk is control your thoughts easily. And that's why I preempted that with what I do. So some of these thoughts just come to us, and we have no option but to, the chemical comes around the body before we've even realised what it is, because it's literally an instant. Because if a saber-toothed tiger leapt out at you, you wouldn't have 30 minutes to go, oh, I need to build up some adrenaline, right, I need to run fast. Okay, so it's instant. The brain spots something, association, it goes, what do I need? And it gives you exactly what you need. But the fright or flight mode, or freeze, it's got three elements of it, is something happens that's really scary, and there's a split second where the brain has to go, do I run? Do I pretend I'm not here and hope for the best? Or do I fight the damn thing? Right? And you're in that mode virtually all the time, waiting for that to happen, but nothing's going on in your body until it happens. And then it goes, pick one of the three. Right? And you've got a split second to pick one of the three. Now, if you choose to run, the brain is then going, okay, we're running. We need energy in the legs. We might need a bit of energy in the arm. We might need energy in the body in case it bites us so we can sort of repel it. But we don't need it for long. So it shuts everything it can to produce the energy for where it does need it. So you've got this burst of adrenaline going around you, but at the same time it says, you might be eaten in a minute, right? You don't need to digest your food properly. We can turn the stomach off for a while, right? And it looks all around the body and it goes, well, what can we turn, what don't you need if you're going to be eaten in a minute? Right? What can we do that will possibly give us every bit of energy into our legs and our arms and everything else that we need? Even your vision will go narrow vision, so that you're running and you're going, right, is there a hole I can crawl into, a tree I can run up, something I can run behind, avoiding things as well. And if you're stressed on a regular basis, you'll start to notice now your stomach, your eyes, your immune system all get affected by this. Because why do you need an immune system if somebody's going to eat you in a minute? Right, it shuts everything off. To me, this is like being ripped in half. Half of you is doing 100 miles an hour, and the other half shut down. Now, that's great for 30 seconds while you escape the saber-toothed tiger. Right? And then you hide up the tree or whatever, and it clears off because it gets fed up. But I just want you to think of this, that worry and the things that humans do are not done by any other animal on the planet. You might have a dog that you think worries, but it doesn't. It's just anxious about certain things. It doesn't worry. It doesn't project into the future the worst possible scenario and then bring it back and live in it. Right? It's just anxious because it got hit once or whatever. And it's just like, oh God, somebody's going to hit me again. So we have this thing called worry, and it's just no good to anybody. So I want you to visualize a scenario that you've seen on telly where the tiger is stalking these antelopes. And it looks at the pack, and it creeps up, and it picks one on the outside that might be old or a really young one or one that's injured, one that it can chase and probably kill. And all of a sudden, it's all action. It springs up, everything scatters, the one it's chasing runs and runs and zigzags and runs, and with a bit of luck, escapes. Right? The minute it escapes and realises the tiger isn't there anymore, it puts its head down, grazes. If it was a human, for the next or for the rest of its life, it will be pestering all the antelopes going, "Oh, the other week, did you see me? That tiger came after me. It was horrible, absolutely horrible." And that's what we do as humans. We spend the rest of our life with something that's annoyed us, actually rethinking it, and we keep going over and over it. Now, why would you go over and over something that hurts you? The only reason is that you want the answer. Because my theory on life, and I only devised this a year or two ago, is that life is just a series of lessons about life. And if you take it as that, there's not much bothers you. Because something happens to you and you just go, "Oh, okay, what can I learn from that? Okay, is it over and done with that?" Yeah. You mop all the loose ends up. You actually finish that bit of work off. So the things that bother us tend to be things that are unfinished. I'll take this camera out of your way because it's not going to work, is it? It's not going to work, is it? Okay, it's all about unfinished business. If you have any element of unfinished business in your head, your brain continues to look at what the reason is. Now, it won't be 24 hours a day it's looking for the answer, but anything slightly similar comes up, and it goes, here we go again. And it goes round that loop again. This is why I have this here. To me, what happens in your brain is you have this continuous loop, and it's always looking for, what should I do next? How will I do that? Because your conscious part of your brain, the bit that you understand life with, or you think you understand life with, the bit that we can go, "Yeah, I know that," is very, very small. It's a little, teensy little thing. In fact, if it was in this room compared with your unconscious, it would be a pinhead compared with the rest of the room being your unconscious. Your conscious part of your brain holds 8 bits of data. So if I told you my phone number now and then carried on talking, you could either listen to me talking or you could remember my phone number, but you can't do both. You might be able to remember it if you do it in bigger chunks. So if I go 01526 832 563, that's only 3 bits of data. Right? So you can hold that and still have a few bits of data left to actually process. But that's how small it is. And that's the bit we think we're clever with. Wrong. Your unconscious part of your brain has 100 trillion data connections. And they can all connect to each other. Any number of them. So it's not even restricted to like two at a time. Even if it's 2 at a time, that's 2 times 100 trillion. Right? But if 1 million of them can connect at a time, that's 1 million times, 1 million times, 1 million times, 1 million times, 100 trillion. It's thought that the power of our brain, there's more possible connections there than there are atoms in the universe. This is the potential of our unconscious mind. But, and here's the big but, it can only run the programs it's given. It's perfectly capable of making new programs. So a few of the things I'm going to tell you today about the bad bits,